Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas and you're listening to episode 32 of the Art Scene Podcast. Sorry for taking so long to release a new episode. I recently got married, so wedding prep was taking very much of my free time. But now I'm back and ready to record more episodes for you all, and hopefully I can get back to releasing them on a more regular basis. Now, before I introduce my next guest, there's a ton of stuff happening here in the Bay Area. A few of them I want to share with you. The first is, if you haven't already, go visit the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts and check out the Bay Area Now 8 Triennial. It will be on exhibit till March 24th. Over at the De Young in Golden Gate Park, there is a beautiful exhibit on contemporary Muslim fashions. In fact, it is the first major museum exhibition to explore the diverse and complex nature of Muslim dress codes. And then over at MOAD, there's a whole new round of exhibitions. The first is titled Ficre Gebreyesus, City with a River Running Through, which is the first museum and West Coast exhibition of Gebreyesus' work. The show brings together more than a dozen of his finest works with a particular focus on abstractly rendered and vivid painted landscapes. The second show over at MOAD is titled Second Look Twice, Selections from the Collections of Jordan D. Snitzer and His Family Foundation. It is an original exhibition of the work of 15 critically acclaimed contemporary artists of African descent, including Gled Legan, Martin Perrier, and Kara Walker, who used printmaking to create vivid and abstracted works. Lastly, the Museum of African Diaspora Emerging Artists Program presents Body Warp, a solo exhibition by Andita Allegra, which explores weaving as performance, requiring a unique receptivity to tensions, extent, and political and emotional spaces. Someone who is very much involved in coordinating this exhibition also happens to be my guest on today's podcast, Soleil Summer. You hear us talk about her journey to the West Coast and the art world, which includes her membership of the Bay Area-based arts collective, Black Male Collective, and her role as exhibitions associate at the Museum of African Diaspora. Now, here's our conversation. Well, thanks for coming on. It's nice to meet you and nice to have you come on to the podcast. And I'm really excited. You're also, like Mark, who was the previous guest I had on, you work over at the Museum of African Diaspora. Mm-hmm. What is it you do here exactly? What's your position here?
Yeah, so my title is Exhibitions Associate. Primarily, I'm managing the Emerging Artist Program and supporting Emily, the Director of Exhibitions and Curatorial Affairs, with what she does.
Cool. So usually, especially with people that I meet, like a brand new, mm-hmm. I always like to start with like just the simple, like, where are you from? Mm-hmm. If you're like, are you from the Bay Area or are you from out of state or out of town?
Yeah, definitely from out of town. I'm from Miami, Florida originally.
Oh, wow.
It's a whole other part of the country that is so weird. Florida's such a strange place. But I'm from Miami, but I moved here from New York City because I'd lived there for a little bit after school, I guess.
So did you end up like staying in Miami for college?
I didn't go to college.
Oh, you didn't go to college?
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't go to college. I graduated high school. I went to like a design focused magnet school in Miami, and I just moved to New York from there and stayed there for a little while. And then had a brief period of time in Pennsylvania and then moved back to New York and then moved to California.
So when you were in Miami and going to this design-based high school, mm-hmm. so was that kind of when you started really getting into like art and mm-hmm. like design and art making itself? Or
it's something that I've always been interested in. You know, like I have sketchbooks from like early middle school. It's like weird anime drawings and like fan art, and then you know I have some things that I made in elementary school too, like little books that I'd made. So I think there was always like some interest in art making, particularly with drawing. And when I went to that school, design and architecture senior high, I was like, my focus was film.
Yeah.
But I took an illustration course in my senior year there. And I think that kind of like opened my eyes to that as a potential place or field. It's always been something that I've done and been interested in, but I didn't really take it seriously up until later.
What were your parents? What did your parents do or do?
What did they do? Yeah. They were like, you need to become an accountant. You need to go to business school. You need to get a.
Did they own a business? That the, no. This was like the specific thing that they wanted you to do?
Like this very specific thing that my mom would always bring up. It's true. She's listening to this. She can't negate these things. But yeah, she would always suggest, you know, doing something a little bit more practical. I mean, my sister is a paralegal, and my parents work with cars. Mm-hmm. Both my parents and my brother, they all work with cars in one way or another. And
yeah,
I had like a, I thought it was like an interesting thing, like a weird thing to like open up this huge machine and see all of these little things inside. But I never really. That interest never trickled down to me or my sister, I guess.
To like get into the family business, basically.
No interest in being oiled up and tinkering below like a 2-ton machine.
Yeah. So when you graduated from high school, what made you want to move to straight to New York? Like, was there friends already there, family, or like, was it just, I just want to go to a different city?
Yeah, my family was there. I mean, my sister lived in New York at the time. She was going to school there. And I had a cousin who lived there as well. They lived in the same apartment, which I also eventually lived in with them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I just, I can't really remember how I came to the decision of New York. I think it was mostly because my sister was there and it seemed like such a, you know, it's a metropolis. Like so many things are there and the buildings are big and, you know, I don't have to drive anywhere. I think that was kind of my my primary thoughts, really. I mean, I was 17. I don't think I was thinking through anything very thoroughly.
Like, I'm like 30, 31, and like, if I'm, every time I go to New York, like, it's still so crazy. Like, it's so overwhelming and crazy still and fun. I can't even imagine being 17, 18, like, moving into this ginormous city.
Yeah, it was a wild experience. I was also, you know, I moved there, like, with my boyfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, moving into my sister's apartment, and I didn't really, you know, luckily I worked at an art supply store that was, like, a large chain, so I just transferred to a store up there, so I didn't really have to worry too much about, like, finding a job and figuring that out and just spent a lot of time, you know, just, like, drawing in the subway and, like, going to museums and kind of really... just soaking in all of what was going on because, I mean, sure, Miami is a pretty international city at this point, you know, but it's not at all like New York.
No, that is day and night. Yeah. Well, and so what was your kind of your plan like when you went there? What was the kind of goals or that you kind of thought of when you moved to New York City? Mm-hmm. Like, did you go there wanting to become an artist? Did you go there just not really, you're just kind of winging it and seeing what happens? Like, because you mentioned you were drawing, you started drawing once you go over there.
Yeah, I definitely was winging it. I think I was just focused on being in the habit of drawing often and wasn't really sure of where that was going to go. It was just something that it was just something that I liked doing and wanted to continue doing. But most of it was just winging it and seeing what would happen,
How long did you end up staying in New York?
I stayed in New York the first time I lived there. I think it was, I want to say maybe a year.
Yeah.
A year or so, more or less, before I moved to Philadelphia.
And what was that move for?
That move was like in the, so in this relationship with this little boyfriend I had, we were like, it was pretty, like, we were having a hard time with each other and we were like, oh, it's, the city is overwhelming us and it's ruining our relationship. Like, we need to go live on a farm. And so we...
And you guys are like probably, what, 18, 19?
Yeah, we're like 17 years old. You're like 17. Like, the stress of the city is like making our relationship unbearable. And so we, through WOOF, the Worldwide Organization of Organic Farms, I believe. Yeah, we went to the small farm actually in Boyertown, Pennsylvania, where we were, like, maintaining this small house and like raising chickens and pigs and like biking around and tending to a garden. And things just ended up not working out there. And so we went to Philadelphia because that's where my partner's brother lived. And then we got swept into Occupy somehow because that was happening at the time.
Yeah.
And then just ended up staying there. We broke up at some point though, and he like moved back to Florida. He moved back to Florida, and I stayed in Philadelphia for a little bit, and then moved back to New York after that. And the second time, I think I was there for maybe just over a year, around a year, more or less.
And then this whole time, are you still drawing? You still like kind of like because you're working at an art museum.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out like
right, how did this happen?
Yeah, like when are we like making the connection where you're kind of like, I really like the art world and I really like drawing and this is the community I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
Is it during the second trip of New York that you start embedding yourself in the art community there or?
Sort of. So I guess. Really like the first seed that was ever planted. I mean, I was like in Miami, I was a studio assistant to Ernie Velez, who was like a graffiti artist in the 80s. Like one of his, like, I remember these two images that are my favorite. He, I don't know if you ever saw that like photo of Lil' Kim and she's got like a swimmer's cap on. She's kind of like in this like of coy pose of Louis Vuitton pattern. Yeah, he painted that, which is like such a funny thing to me. But I was a studio assistant for him, and you know, through that I was also helping him with like cataloging things and maintaining things. When I moved to New York, I like helped him with art. He had like a table at Artists and Fleas Market that kind of like taught me about inventory and things like that. And then, I mean, the second time I lived in New York, I like did an internship at Art Market for like 2 days because I did it and it seemed cool, but I was just like Googling hot air balloons and stuff. And I just thought it was really boring. So I actually like wasn't really interested in it for a long time in that world. I was just like, I don't understand this. Why am I looking up hot air balloons for 3 hours? Like, this is really not at all interesting to me. But then I moved to the Bay, and I think the first two things I looked up were like donut shops and like black owned galleries. And like one of the galleries that I found was Betty Ono Gallery. And so I went there, and it was during Tatiana Fazlizadeh's show. I'm probably saying that incorrectly, but it was for the show that she had there, you know, Stop Telling Women to Smile. And I was like, wow, like, this space is so amazing. Like, how can I help? And so I started off as a volunteer there and then bumped up to an intern and then bumped up into being like the, I guess, gallery coordinator after a few years.
Well, let's go back a little bit. When you went, so after Philadelphia and you moved back to Miami for a little, for like a quick minute, this is when you were working in as a studio assistant to this, to the artist in Miami. Was this in Miami that this started?
Yeah, that was before I like went on this journey through the, this was like,
oh, this is like at the very beginning.
Yeah, this is at the very beginning. Yeah, I went all the way back. Yeah.
So that's interesting. So then, so you were able to still stay in contact with him even when you moved to New York.
Yeah.
And then like do stuff for him there.
Yeah.
And that was that when you took that on, like when you know, working with this artist, did you do that because at that point you were like, maybe I want to try this out? Like, is like, I want to try out like the art world and kind of like get in it and learn more about it?
I think I was mostly invested in just like being helpful and like doing something new.
Yeah.
Because you know? At that point I had never managed anything like that in that way before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I was just really young and wanting to just see and try new things.
Yeah.
So that's mostly where that
came out of. So then what then led you from New York after now that you're the second time you go back to New York? What led you to go to Oakland?
So my best friend at the time, who's still my best friend, thankfully, they lived in Philadelphia, and I was working at like an American Apparel or something in New York, and I was having a really bad day, and so I called my friend and I was like, hey, how are you? What's up? And they were like, oh, I'm good. You know, I'm thinking about moving to Oakland. I'm really interested in the organizing that they're doing over there. So I was thinking about going, and I was like, cool, I'll go with you.
And what do you mean by organizing?
Like community organizing, they were very much, or at least in Philadelphia, they were working with projects like Philly Jail Support and like Food Not Bombs, and more so like political kind of organizing. Yeah.
So when you say you're like interested in helping, you just like the idea of like giving back and like volunteering and like helping with causes, it sounds like, and even like just local stuff is what it seems like.
Yeah. I think definitely at the time I had a lot of energy to do that.
Yeah.
I was really invested in kind of supporting folks in the ways that I could.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean I personally didn't have a reason to move to Oakland except for this friend that I really loved and was like, what? Like, you're going to Oakland? Like, sure, whatever, I'll go with you. That's new. I've never been to California before. Like, let's do it. And so we bought our tickets in June and then landed October 2nd, 2013.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you've been there, you've been here since.
Yeah.
What did you think when you came over here? Like, what was like after, because you spent time basically on the East Coast this whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like you never seen the sunshine because you get that, you grew up with that in Miami.
Yeah.
So, and you got a little bit of the urban life in New York City. Mm-hmm. So what did you like about coming to Oakland?
Yeah, it was really funny. I remember this very specific moment that happened because me and my best friend moved here with another friend who had lived here previously. And we were walking around through like a specific part of West Oakland. He was like, yeah, like this is the hood, da 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 da. And I was like, it's really clean. It's really clean.
Really?
Over here.
You thought that was clean? So compared to what I would assume like Philly and New
York.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, like what do you mean? Like the houses are so big and nice and like everything's really clean. I mean, I was very used to like people having front lawns too, like that's a pretty common thing in Miami, but it doesn't really happen here as much. I mean, that was definitely a first impression, and also we like went to Alameda Beach, and I was very shocked by how cold the water was. I mean, our first couple of weeks here, we stayed in a kind of co-op house in Oakland, and I think I was really impressed by just how, at the time, just how people were living together, you know? Because I hadn't lived in co-op housing prior, really, at least not in the way that it was fashioned here. Like, there was, like, a really wonderful chore wheel that didn't seem annoying or stressful. Like, folks cooked for each other. Just, like, the way that folks lived together in that house was really... It felt really comforting despite them all being complete strangers to me. I mean, I just was very impressed by how people communicated with each other and engaged with each other.
Yeah.
And I think I was maybe 19 at the time.
So this is like, so all these cities, and by the time you're in Oakland, you're still 19, you're just 19?
Yeah.
You moved around in like 2 years.
Yeah, I know. I did a lot. It was really, I couldn't imagine doing that now. I think about it and I'm just like, even like moving to a new house is just so, such an overwhelming thought. But somehow during that time, I was just like ready to go at any moment.
Yeah. So now what are you doing for work, and like, what are you doing, I guess, artistically at this point now that you're in Oakland?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, there was a period of time where I thought I wanted to show in galleries, so I was, like, making paintings and stuff, and and was in a few shows at, I guess, what's now defunct MoCo in downtown Oakland, and did a show at SFSU, which was kind of done with the Black Male Collective, which maybe we could talk about.
Oh, yeah.
We're on the way to that.
Yeah.
So I did like a couple of gallery shows, and it was interesting, more so anxiety inducing for me. And so I'm kind of like,
well, why do you say that? What is anxiety inducing?
I don't know. I think just like this, you know, you're like gearing up for it, you're like making these pieces of artwork, and then you like put them up in the space, and everyone's looking at it, and you're looking at them looking at it, and you're like, oh, this person looked at it a little too long, or like they're not looking at it long enough, or like, what do they think this is about?
You would never survive a grad school, like art school program.
I would fall to pieces. Maybe, I don't know. It's just something about it just didn't, that whole kind of experience didn't really appeal to me. And I mean, maybe that's changed now. Maybe I would show work in a gallery now, but I just don't.
Yeah, because you mentioned earlier that you mentioned before about how it's you like to keep it, it's more personal to you, your work.
Yeah, I think it's pretty personal, not necessarily in subject matter. Like, mm-hmm. I think I do a lot of random things. Like, I take a lot of photos. Like, there's thousands of photos on my computer and on my phone of just things that I'll draw from there, or I'll draw from, books of reference. A lot of it feels like practicing. And then I recently got into like making prints. Some friends of mine, Floss Editions, Megan Aaron, like they've been really supportive in like helping me make prints with their risograph, which is pretty cool. And that's something that I didn't really think about doing before. Most of what I'm doing now is like print or like zines, or like very much in my sketch, in the parameters of my sketchbook, and not much outside of that, which is fine with me.
Yeah,
really, like I don't always feel super inclined to share everything that I do, and I like the idea of illustration because it feels more a problem solving kind of thing to me. Like, here's this concept, or here's this story or idea, and take what you interpret from that to turn it into an image that someone can understand, or can use to better understand something else. I think I just really appreciate that, rather than like having to tell a story or like having to pose a question. I think being able to do that within my own mind and then present it along with someone else to help them understand something is something that I like and hopefully will continue doing.
Well, so you mentioned started working with the Betty Ono Gallery. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the Betty Ono Gallery, and tell me how you got connected with the gallery.
Yeah, I mean, I just walked in.
Really?
Yeah, I just walked in. I just walked in during the opening for that show, the Tatiana Stop Telling Women to Smile exhibition. I think that was, I want to say that was 2013. Maybe 2014. And I just walked in and asked if they needed help. They wanted to volunteer, and I volunteered, and then just kind of moved up slowly in the ranks to coordinating the gallery with Anika Barber, who's the owner of that space.
Well, tell me, what is the Betty Ono Gallery?
Oh yeah, yeah. So Betty Ono Gallery, they're a gallery in downtown Oakland, located on 15th and Broadway. And the name of the gallery is pulled from, it's like a combined name of Betty Davis and Yoko Ono, who, for Anika, who started the gallery, were like just two really like strong women of color working in the arts in one way or another. Betty Davis with her music and Yoko Ono with like her artwork.
Yeah.
And, they do shows specifically with, marginalized communities, especially like with Black artists that are living in the Bay Area. I think there have been some shows in the past with artists from other cities, but primarily working with Black artists living in Oakland or living in the Bay Area. Like some artists who I really, really liked were Paul Lewin, who's kind of like an Afro futurist kind of surrealist painter who like relies on kind of African and Caribbean folklore to create new worlds, and Brittany Sensaba, or Brit Sense, who's a photographer who has made these really beautiful images of just everyday Black life in Oakland. And they've been around Betty Ono has been around for a while. I forget how, I feel bad that I forgot. It's been a while since I've had to like have this information like at the top of my mind. I'm pretty sure Betty Ono has been around since 2011. It started as like a pop-up at SOMAR, I believe. And then they got a space on Telegraph and then moved into the space on Broadway, I think in 2013, around that time.
And this and the job he had there, was this a paying gig or are these all volunteer?
It started off unpaid and then turned into a paid gig.
Yeah, and you sound like the way you described it is that you just moved up the ladder a little bit, like pretty fast. What was it that you liked about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just liked the space.
You liked the space.
I just liked the space. I liked the art that they were showing, and I mean, the location was really great. I think one part of it that I really appreciated was just being able to meet all of these, you know, people from all walks of life who would come in, because it's very like, it's very public facing space. Like the front wall is all glass and it's right there on kind of like a, this like intersection of Broadway and Telegraph, right between two BART stations. And so that was another part of it that I really enjoyed, was just meeting folks who were super interested in art and maybe really wanted to see a specific artist, or were just walking by on their lunch break and normally wouldn't even think about art but saw it and wanted to ask questions and engage in a conversation about what the artwork meant at the time or whatever the current political climate was. And yeah, that was what I particularly, which I mean, that part I got to learn a little bit more throughout my internship there, or the internship period there. But yeah, it was, you know, I just really liked the space and wanted to be there.
Yeah. And so when you left, at what point, what position were you at there? Like, what were you doing?
I was the gallery coordinator. So I was doing a lot of things, like coordinating the events that were happening there, helping with install and deinstall, you know, other things that like are kind of boring that people don't really talk about, like ordering vinyl and like going on runs to get cut, everything. Because, you know, for a while it was myself and, you know, another person. And then, I mean, aside from Anika, but then after that it was just me and Anika. So kind of like juggling all aspects really of what that space needed.
And how old are you at this point?
Oh, wow. I had to be 21. I think I might have been 20 when I started volunteering and then was 21 by the time that I was.
Because I want to point out that that's like a really big deal, that like at 21, like you're doing gallery coordinating. And when you think about like, I've been to grad school with people who, out of grad school at like in their mid to late 20s, they work to become a gallery coordinator. And at 21, with no college degree, by the way, like you're gaining this really important skill, really good experience as running, helping coordinate the gallery.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am super appreciative of every person that ever thought to give me a chance. Because, you know, I could only imagine like if I owned a gallery and someone walked in, they're like, hey, I don't have a degree.
Yeah.
I don't have anything, but like I want to do this. So
yeah. Well, I mean, even just your age at that point to have that, to have the responsibility to be able to handle that at 21.
I mean, yeah, it was stressful.
Yeah. I mean, at 21, I was stressed about a test. And what you were doing like really mattered, because it wasn't just you and the gallery owner, it's like the artist too is like relying on you all too, right?
So it was definitely, I mean, yeah, in retrospect, thinking of, and especially with you saying that now too, it's like, oh my gosh,
which is really cool. I mean, you got a crash course at an earlier stage in your life, I think. On, I mean, you talk about how like nobody wants to hear that's boring, but like but I like to hear about it, and I like it because I think it's a part of the gallery and like and the museum world that people don't really talk about.
Yeah, it's good to be transparent.
Right. Yeah, because the curation part of it and even the art that gets made is just one part of the whole process of getting it on exhibit.
It's like the very tiny tip of this huge iceberg full of emails and meetings and like weird spreadsheets and documents that like people don't even, they're, you know, they're not exposed to that because it's all happening.
Yeah, for sure.
In a totally different space. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the Blackmail Collective, because this is the collective. And this is not the first time I've heard of him, because I've interviewed Musée.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Musée has mentioned him to me. It's the collective to me. Yeah. And it's Oakland-based as well, right? And so tell me how then you became part of the Blackmail Collective.
Yeah, so, you know, Blackmail actually started off as being San Francisco-based.
Really?
Yeah, it started off as being San Francisco-based, I want to say, in 2015. It was originally Ace West, Christopher Birch, Christopher Martin, Michael Covington, and there's someone that whose name, it might have been Junebug, actually. I think it was Junebug. And they're all visual artists, and they were doing shows at the Luggage Store Gallery and some other spaces, you know, kind of... with this intention of speaking to like Black men making art in San Francisco and kind of exposing that and what that could look like to the world.
Yeah.
You know? Fast forward a couple of years, and I think they were wanting to do a really big project, and so they reached out to a friend of mine, Yetunde Olagbaju, who's also a really wonderful artist and is a member of Blackmail as well. They had reached out to Yetunde around kind of like some organizational things, and Yetunde and Ace then reached out to me about also hopping on to this. And I was like, I might have been a little apprehensive at first, but also pretty excited because like I thought they were really cool. I thought their art was really cool, so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, you know, and it was just kind of funny because like I don't identify as male, like I'm not,
right,
you know, so we'll see how this works. And so, you know, pretty soon after we had like one really big meeting, luckily I was working at Betty Yeno at the time, and Anika allowed us to have our meeting in that space. So it was maybe like 12 of us, and then we like FaceTimed or like Google Hangout with Jared, because Jared is living in DC at the time, and we just had this huge meeting about, I think it was like 2 or 3 hours long, of like, what should Blackmail be? Like, what should this project be? You know, what do we want to do? Like, now that there's ladies in Blackmail, what does that mean? Like, having this really big conversation about all of the potentials for the group. And out of that came a zine, is our first zine together, and the theme was love, and we had made that just after the Ghost Ship fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we dedicated it to Alex and Hannah, who had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like our first big project that we had done together, which was really exhilarating and also, you know, tiring. You know, you're like, we're like, should we use Slack? Like, should we not use Slack? You know, like, just, you know, typical things of kind of communicating with each other. But I think that project really pushed us to understand each other and what our roles would be in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And then our next project was at First Amendment, which the one in Oakland before became part two. Yeah, so we did a month-long project there called The Junction.
Okay.
Which was like a series of workshops and screenings. We did like a bike ride that we all planned together, that, you know, that was a really exciting opportunity for us to do something beyond just showing artwork in a gallery, or like showing artwork in a printed book.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, like, at this point, your role in the collective, are you still like contributing like your work to these like these shows and these projects?
Yeah. I contributed I contributed to the book, the printed book, because that was artwork and essays and an interview. And I also had contributed some artwork for like the marketing of the Junction, and then also contributed artwork to, I think the show that we did at SFSU was just before we were planning for the Junction, actually. So, I mean, at this point, I was definitely doing a little bit of a combination role, but mostly like more administrative things, like helping figure out our scheduling and dates and how much things would cost and whether we would charge for something or not, and kind of helping with creating some of the partnerships for that.
Yeah. So really using whatever you learned working at a Betty Ono to like help, to help out the collective.
Yeah. So that came in handy for sure. So yeah, and that was kind of the last big project that we did together. And now we're kind of in this like, I don't want to necessarily, I mean, we're kind of on a hiatus at this point, but we're still, we're always constantly talking to each other and sending each other opportunities and working with each other in like smaller little groups. I don't know if, there's any plans to do another big, big project.
But like the existence of the collective kind of still exists in the sense that you're all still connected, you still keep in contact, you all collaborate on one, with each other in some way. But as terms of like all of you all in one place showing, it's like it's been a little bit of time since then.
It's been, that project happened last year, like August and September, I want to say.
And why do you think, just because everyone's busy probably with their own thing?
Busy, like, you know, going to school, having day jobs, you know, making art on top of all of that, keeping up a social life. Like, there are so many things that all of us are doing all of the time that I think, you know, in that moment when the Junction happened, like, all of us, like, had enough wiggle room to really work on that. And now things have just, I think, have built up for everyone. You know, in different ways. I mean, maybe for some folks it hasn't, but we just haven't really had the chance to do something like that again, which hopefully we will in the future, in the near future. But
Well, so then, so this is like, I don't know, in the last couple of years, right? Like a lot of this stuff has happened, I would assume. So now, when did you make the transition from the Betty Ono Gallery over to the Museum of African Diaspora?
I think it was, so I got this job in April of last year. And I think towards the end of 2016, I just, you know, I think gallery coordinating, I think there were just so many things that I was doing. I wanted to be a little bit more focused on one project. And I wasn't like actively looking at the time. I think I would check Craigslist or like NYFA, because sometimes they post things in California, and like all of the other kind of job posting websites. I would like look very passively, but then a friend told me about the position open here, which was a new position, and I was like, oh, no, I can't do that.
Did you feel like you were underqualified for it?
Yeah, I felt like pretty underqualified, and I was like, they would, they're a museum, like, why would they want some, like, why would they want somebody like me? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But my friend was like, get it together, apply for the job.
I was gonna say, like, based on what you told me, what you do at the gallery, that's more than enough experience.
I mean, I guess I just didn't think, I mean, I don't know, I suffer from imposter syndrome like a lot of other people do.
I feel you on that.
It's a real thing. And I was like, all right, I'll apply. And then, you know, I did the interview with Emily, and then they called me back and did another interview with Linda and Michael War, who was the deputy director at the time. And I was like so shaken up after that interview. I was like, wow, like they're so like stoic. And
well, it's like a totally different world, right? The museum world is like a whole different level of like, I wouldn't say, because not to say that galleries aren't professional, but like there's a different level of professionalism, I guess, right? Like you get a different vibe, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily different kind of like, I mean, I think, they're definitely both very professional spaces. I think just a museum with several galleries versus one space. And also, you know, I would be working with more people than I had prior, you know. So I just, and I had never worked in a museum before. And I think when I was younger, I maybe thought about it.
Yeah.
But never, you know, it was always like kind of just a thought floating around in my head of like, oh, it'd be interesting to work in a museum. Or, oh, it'd be nice to work in a museum. Like, I wonder what that would be like. And you know, luckily that position came up right at the time that I was thinking about it. And I applied. Clearly, I got the job. I mean, I'm working here. That was, I guess, like a year and a half ago.
So what kind of stuff do you do here?
Yeah, so I work, I manage the Emerging Artist Program. And my role in that is a lot of coordinating, you know, finding, for example, I guess I'll just start from the top with the application process, because the application opens up once a year in the springtime, like April, May. And we do it through Slideroom, which is like an online application portal. And so I set that up. Also, you know, look for jurors, folks in the area that I think are really forward thinking and interesting folks who've done work in the Bay Area. And usually Emily too. I'll talk to her about ideas with jurors and we'll select them and then open up the applications. Those come in, I field all the questions that we get. So if someone's like, oh, like, you know, I wanna submit this, like, how do I do that? Or this link isn't working or this thing isn't working, like fielding those kind of like troubleshooting things and also just general questions about applying.
Sure.
And then, you know, coordinating our, you know, closing the application down, and then, which lasts about 2 months, more or less.
Are you running it then? Like, basically, you're running it, right?
More or less, yeah.
And as your exhibitions coordinator, right, is your title?
Exhibitions associate.
Associate.
Yeah.
So do you only, is that your only, do you get to work on the other shows as well simultaneously?
Yeah, I mean, my primary focus is the Emerging Artist Program, and I support Emily in what she does, so I'll help, like, for example, with the shows that are coming up.
Yeah.
For Second Look Twice, I'm one of three curators for that show.
So, oh, cool.
Along with Essence Harden, who's an independent curator based in LA.
Yeah.
Co-curated that, and I'm currently, you know, working on writing labels and, like, doing research for that show. And, you know, that's kind of like where, that is like a pretty prime example of where I stand as far as like,
yeah,
supporting other things in the museum. And then in March, we opened up a totally new program that was 6 months long called the MOAD Artists in Residence,
mm-hmm,
which we did in the Bayview on 3rd Street in Kirkwood. And that was like a short-term, you know, studio residency program, which,
yeah,
we invited two artists who had a relationship, well, three artists who had a relationship to the Bayview to be in that space. Chris Birch and Chris Martin, who are both in the Black Male Collective, actually, but have both done quite a bit of work in the Bayview around, like, education. We invited them to share the space,
yeah,
for a while, and then invited Genevieve Leighton Arma, who works with Bay Cat,
yeah,
and is also a photographer working primarily with disposable cameras, to be in that space. And so I managed that program,
yeah,
which was kind of like a new thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think MOAD has done an artist in residence program in that way before. Definitely learned a lot. It was really fun. It was really great to be able to, like, totally transform a space and,
yeah,
then watch other people continue to transform,
yeah,
that space through their practice. And we also had, like, the space is in the shape of a triangle. So the smaller end of the triangle was like a gallery,
yeah,
area, and then the rest of it was like their studio space.
But you get to take ownership a little bit of the emerging arts, it sounds like, of the emerging, yeah, arts program.
Yeah, that's my, that's
like your baby.
Yeah, that's like my little,
that's really cool.
My little baby. Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, what, how was that? Taking on, I mean, did you do that right off the bat when you started here? Like, and if so, like, how was that transition from now where you're working, doing a million different things at the Betty Ono Gallery, now you get to, like, really, like, take ownership on this like one like air the show?
Yeah, it was great. My first meeting with Emily, we were about to open up the next round, mm-hmm. Open up the applications, and I had a meeting with Emily, and we were talking, and we were like, oh, like we should do. We were talking about like making a hashtag or something, and I was like, cool, like I'll do some research about that. And Emily was like, no, you're not going to do that. That's what our marketing team is going to do. And I was like, what? I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I was like so shocked at what I just, that was such a moment of clarity for me of like, oh, okay, so I can really focus on this,
yeah,
this one thing. And I think it was, I mean, like with any job, you know, you start working somewhere and you're like meeting everyone and you're like looking through all these files and looking through old files and asking all of these questions and trying to really like get a strong grip of what is going on.
Yeah.
You know? But I think for me, I felt really excited to, yeah, like you were saying, to take ownership over kind of this one very specific program. And I also really enjoy this program because it kind of ties in like all of what we were talking about earlier, like being able to support folks and like being able to get a really broad scope of what's happening in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Too. So yeah, it was, I don't want to say it was an easy transition, because any transition into a new job is never like right. cut and clean.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But it's definitely what I had been looking for, I think,
yeah.
at the time. Yeah.
Well, and so now you've been at it for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
You seem to really like it.
Yeah.
Especially like the part where you're even aside, like you're not just like, because I think at any other institution, if you told anybody you're an exhibitions associate, I think they're thinking like an exhibitions coordinator, right?
Right.
And totally. The most that they do really is kind of just coordinating, making sure everybody kind of does what they need to do to get the exhibition going, and not really anything what you're doing with right. the emerging artist program. Mm-hmm. You're really being able to run that and really make it is what it is. So having that experience, mm-hmm. what do you see yourself doing the next 10 years from now? Like, do you want to keep going that route,
oh, gosh,
and like keep working at a museum, as an institution, yeah. and kind of like, you know, kind of how you climbed up the ladder real quickly at Betty Ono Gallery. Do mm-hmm. you kind of want to do that, but at the museum level, now that you have a taste of what it is at a bigger institution?
Yeah. Wow. Gosh. I don't think so.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying that with like, oh, like working in a museum has tarnished my thoughts about what being in a museum is, because I think, you know, it's a really interesting job and I'm learning a lot and hope to continue learning a lot. And it's definitely something that I want to do for a while. I think in 10 years, ideally, I would be self-employed doing something. I don't know what yet.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my life choices are pretty, just based on like the trajectory of the last 5 years of my life is pretty impulsive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I imagine that I will probably be doing something wildly different than this in 10 years, or maybe not, you know, I don't know.
But do you think still art related or?
Probably still art related,
yeah.
in some form. I mean, I think I'm also really curious about, you know, learning some sort of like trade, you know, mm-hmm. like shoemaking or like carpentry or like a really practical learning like having a you know, I have these like really ridiculous thoughts of like, okay, if everything around me was like going up in flames, like how would I be able to like contribute yeah. to the world, you
yeah.
know, like I can't like send an email or coordinate a show, sure. like if you know, everything's going up in flames. Like, how do I?
You really thinking like, about that level?
I mean, it's just like a funny. I mean, maybe a little bit. Like, I think I just am always thinking about like, cool. Like, I would love to have a set of skills that, you know, are somewhat art related and are creative that I can use to apply to like help people or
sure.
like, you know. You know, actually once at Betty Ono, for the, Betty Ono got an Indie Award mm-hmm. from Beneficial State Bank, and we had like a meeting with all of the other finalists, and one of them, I forget their name and I forget their business, and I'm really sorry if they ever hear this. Hopefully they can plug themselves in like a comment somewhere. But they were working with this idea of creating like a hub where folks can get things replaced, you know, like it would be a place where there was like someone who worked with watches, someone who worked with shoes, a seamstress, like all of these different folks in this one space. So that instead of like throwing things away, they can just be repaired, which I thought was like a really interesting idea and something that has floated around in my mind for a while. And just thinking about like all the things that I throw away and like what it would be like to have a set of skills in which I could minimize that.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll be something that goes alongside with continuing to work in a museum. I don't really know. I think.
Yeah, like because like now like hearing like all the different jobs and like journeys that you've taken.
No,
I'm trying to find like what do you think is the common, like what attracts you to almost everything that you've done? Like what is the common thing? I mean, you've mentioned like helping, right? And it is true. Like in almost every job, in some way, you're assisting either a movement, a group, a social like. Movement, or even like you're even like helping out even here at MOAD, like you're helping out with a program that really is beneficial to to like artists here in the city. So there seems to be, I feel like that seems to be the connection, is that you like being in a position to help further something and to even help it grow. But then it's also like you kind of like once you do that, you want to move on to the like the next thing.
I think I've always been like, you know, I think I'm just generally a curious person.
Yeah.
And also at the core of all of these things, even going back to this idea of illustration, I think the root of it is problem solving and like thinking through things in that way. Because a large chunk of being a gallery coordinator and working with the Emerging Artist Program and, you know, being a studio assistant and working in retail and like all of these things, like the root of all of that is just, you know, here's an issue, or here's, you know, something that's happening, and what can we do to move that forward? And same with like what I imagine a cobbler does. You know, here's this thing that I need to make. How do I create that? Like, what is the problem that I'm trying to get to the bottom of?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. And I think I just generally like to leave my options in life just always open.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's just so many things that I could do and so many things that, you know, I mean, I imagine all of them will be related to art or creativity in some way, just because that's how it's been my whole life. You know? But I just like to think about the different ways that can be employed.
Yeah.
You know?
Like as though, like, you don't want to miss out on something, another opportunity. Like, right, just because you're so focused on just this one.
Yeah, I don't know if I would necessarily say that I wouldn't want to miss out on an opportunity. It's more so of just, like, just a, you know, it's a really basic curiosity of, like, what something could be. Like, I don't necessarily feel like, oh, I need to do all of these new things and I need to try new things. It's just more of, like, oh, what would happen if I stayed in Philadelphia for longer? Or what would happen if I, like, you know, I'm feeling like moving back to New York, so I'll do that. Or, you know, what would happen if I moved to California? Never been there. Like, what's that all about? Like, I think I'm just curious and interested. I don't know if I have any sense of urgency around, like, needing to be, you know, like a jack of all trades or something.
Right. You know? Right.
Aside from the like end of the world thing, I guess, but that's like a longer term thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Although that's not, you know, it's not my modus operandi. Like, that's not how I'm like, my whole life trajectory isn't around, like, you know.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to plug before I let you go? Like, do you think here at MOAD, or even like art wise on your end?
Yeah. I definitely would want to plug MOAD, of course.
Yeah.
All of our exhibitions are opening, September 19th, and that's, you know, Second Look Twice, which is a print show, pulled from the Jordan Schnitzer collection.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ficre Gebrezus, which is a city with a river running through. That's a solo show of his artwork. And also the Emerging Artist Gallery. Our first artist will be showing their Indira Allegra with Body Warp. Mm-hmm. And that opens September 19th as well, but we'll be having a reception for that on October 4th.
Cool.
From 6 to 8.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks again for listening, and thanks again to Soleil for coming onto the podcast. To learn more about all events and programming at the Museum of African Diaspora, please visit moedsf.org. Also, please be sure to follow them on either Instagram at moed_SF or Twitter at moedsf. Also, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you use to listen, and leave us a comment or a review. Okay, till next time.